Welcome to a very special Nerdist podcast number 63
with Will Friggin Wheaton, one of my oldest and dearest friends. We were roommates when we were teenagers, and we really hadn't had a chance to sit down and catch up in this much detail until this podcast. So we recorded this a few weeks ago at Smod Castle in Los Angeles, so thanks to Kevin Smith and Matt Cohen for making that available to us. It was fantastic, and they were super cool. All right, a couple quick announcements. I have some live stand-up shows. I would like you to come. Let us run through some dates. March 2nd through 5th, I will be at the San Francisco Punchline. Then March 11th, I'll be hosting a chat with Jimmy Fallon at the Paley Center for Media in Los Angeles. Then March 13th, 14th, and 15th, I will be doing various shows at South by Southwest Interactive. Then the 16th through the 19th, I'll be at Zany's in Chicago. April 8th, Huke Lao in Chicopee, Massachusetts. And April 9th, The Big Show at the Wilbur Theater in Boston, Massachusetts. So details for all that stuff are at, of course, Nerdist.com. And I would also like to welcome back Falcon Northwest Computers, our sponsor for the third week in a row, making it happen. Listen, if you want a custom-built laptop or desktop PC, these are the guys you got to talk to. They're in the Pacific Northwest. They build everything by hand. There's not some crazy factory with a bunch of conveyor belts and a bunch of automated machines doing everything. They do it. They will customize your PC with logos. They will give you the customer support that you need once you take it home. They're good guys. They're awesome nerds. And they've been reviewed and lauded by pretty much any kind of tech review company that you could possibly think of has given these guys the big old thumbs up. So go over to falcon-nw.com, check out the reviews, check out their products, custom design your computer, they will build it for you, and you will be more than pleased with the results. Falcon Northwest Computers, again, that's falcon-nw.com, masterpieces of handcrafted silicon. And now here's the Nerdist Podcast episode number 63 with Will Wheaton!
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Keep clapping. Hello. Keep clapping.
There you go.
All right, that's good. I'm micing the audience this time. I want to make sure you guys don't run too hot. Welcome to the show, young lady. I see you got your water box right there. No one listening.
Just crouch for the whole show.
Okay, all right. Here we go. I'm going to hold this microphone because it's
not
weird
me. Should we hold ours too?
I think it's
lazy.
Better than, you know,
get some symmetry going on.
I don't know. Do whatever you want.
But whenever I don't have to use my hands, I kind of want to do that.
All right. It's totally up to you. This is your, listen, they're your prehensile fingers. You apply them to whatever objects you feel like. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming out tonight to the Nerdist Podcast at Smod Castle, everybody. Very exciting week. We're in almost week three.
What are we?
Well, I don't know.
This will be week seven or something.
Yeah, but anyway, we've been doing the Guest List Nerdist Podcast, and they've been super fun. And the last time we were here with Kevin Smith, who was awesome. We discovered
coined the term Vader pussy.
Vader pussy.
Vader pussy. Yeah.
Someone just tweeted me the other day that they used it as a euphemism for something that was awesome. So they said, "Yeah, that sounds so Vader pussy."
Hmm.
Yeah. And, that sounds like an old man trying to be hip.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, oh, I get you, kids. That new band is total Vader pussy.
Dad, come on, Dad.
Come on, I'm a Vader pussy kind of guy.
Dad, that's not how you use it.
Vader pussy.
Oh.
At least he's trying.
It's true. What do you guys anything fun going on this week before we bring Will out?
Personally?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Anything fun?
Hmm.
You're just working all the time.
Work a lot. Do this sometimes. Cry most of the time.
most of the time.
Yeah, my iPhone's broken. I didn't
Sorry?
Yeah, it's I don't know what I didn't drop it near water if that's what you're wondering.
Oh, okay. Just happened magically. Just a localized thunderstorm in your phone.
Yeah, yeah.
All
yeah.
Right, I get it.
My the inside of my phone controls the weather, and there's a small weather system in there, so that's why it got broken.
It's like Sean Connery in the Avengers movie, but smaller.
Yep.
From now on, you'll buy your weather from me.
And who is that?
Sean Connery.
Oh.
Maybe? No. No?
Sorry.
Who did you think it was?
No, I knew who it was.
Wait, do it again.
I was just trying to make you feel bad about yourself.
Oh, thank you.
Hold on. You know what? We got to do the James Lipton thing. Matthew, I would like to talk to Sean Connery right now.
Yes, Chris?
No, Sean Connery. He said Sean Connery.
No. This is a pretty good Sean Connery.
I'm sorry, did you have a stroke?
Some slight paralyzation on my right side.
You seem to be sagging on one side. Yeah. That is
I'm
not
also bloated from the medication.
That's Sean Connery. You know what? I feel like we could blab for a few more minutes, or...
Sounds good. So...
Oh. I'm just so excited to get our guest out here because... We've been friends for, he just reminded me, shit, I don't want to say it, but it's a really long fucking time. We've been friends a long time.
Say it.
What?
Say it.
We've been friends for 20 years. Okay.
20 years.
Oh, it hurts. Oh, God, that hurts so much to say that. Oh, it hurts so much to say that. But, you know, he is an amazing guy and has just been one of my best buddies for as long as I can possibly remember. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage, LeVar Burton. No, it's Will Wheaton. Will Wheaton, everybody.
That's expect a lot of that. If seeing them talk before the show is any indication, expect a lot of weird inside jokes.
Mm-hmm. I had to make notes, and I never make notes for this show, as you probably know if you listen, just because... There are so many wonderful things that I want to talk about with you. Things that have happened throughout our lives. Treasured
Across
moments.
Across the 20 years that we've known each
yes.
other.
Yes. What would you do if I sang out of tune?
What was it like working on the Wonder Years?
I knew on that afternoon as Chris and I walked across the street that going to the store was less about getting food and trying to buy beer, and it was more about expressing ourselves as the young men we were becoming.
I'm glad to hear that because for a second I thought you would cast me as Winnie. And I was going to be...
I had.
So Will and I met in the early 90s. And we met through...
My friend Cal.
Cal Mann.
Was in your fraternity.
I was in a fraternity for my freshman year of college.
Jock.
Which I have disavowed. If I were still in the frat, I'd fucking punch you in the face. But I'm not. Because it's a horrible way to live. But
do you remember where we actually first met?
No.
In front of the AMC 10 theaters in Burbank.
Okay.
Going in to see Arachnophobia.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Dated.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I totally remember that. And then the whole time after the movie, everyone was like, did you feel something on your leg? Like, we totally freaked out.
It really freaked the fuck out.
We really had it. We really got it. And now if you watch Arachnophobia, you're like...
I'd actually rather not watch.
You don't want to watch Arachnophobia?
No, it really skeeves me out.
You don't like spiders?
Not even a little bit. I don't even enjoy killing them, which is weird for something that I hate.
Oh, right. I go down on them because I want them to...
Really?
Yeah. I want them to go away in pleasure.
You should come over to my house.
Really?
Yeah.
You want me to eat out all your spiders?
Yeah, I do. And then you'll leave and I'll be like, well, if you want more of that, spiders, fucking shape up. Get out of my barbecue.
That Chris Hardwick, he sure can make a spider come.
I once saw him change the hourglass on the underside of a black widow into a moon.
She was a widow, but she wasn't mourning her ex-husband anymore.
No, she was not. You just got to be you gotta be a little faster than the spider. You're going to do that because they will try to kill you. I sort of developed a snake phobia because of you.
Really? Like, you didn't have that because of life?
No.
No.
No, because how often do you come in contact with snakes? If you live in a big city... Your whole life, it's very rare unless you're in the pet store. Or if you...
If you house sit for me.
If you house sit for Will. Will used to have a 6-foot python.
12-foot.
12-foot python named Sebastian?
Yes.
Okay. So...
Yes, named after the guy from Blade Runner.
There you go. So we... There was one time
this one time when Will was working on a movie called Toy Soldiers, and his parents were out of town. I house sat for them.
That's right.
And I don't know, you were probably like 17 at the time.
No, I was 18 because I was allowed to be off working on the movie by myself.
Oh, right. Okay.
Without supervision.
Okay, good.
Which, good for you, buddy. Which, as it turns out, was a great idea.
You and Sean Astin get up to some monkey business over there?
A little bit of monkey business.
That's great. I got up to some snake business when Sebastian the Snake lived in a giant terrarium next to Will's snazzy waterbed. And so
it was the snazziest waterbed that never actually saw any action of all the waterbeds in
really?
The world.
You know, you want to see my snake? Oh, is that a waterbed? That seems...
It never worked.
If it makes you feel any better, I had sex with my college girlfriend on your waterbed while you were out of town once. All right?
At least somebody did.
That's what you get for being in a frat.
So the waterbed next to your terrarium that you bought with your Star Trek money got some action.
Yeah. So I was banging this Kappa pussy, and no. And that was not the case. But so I'm there.
So was it just like the crazy turbulent wave motion? Did it dislodge the pins that kept the snake in his terrarium? So this is actually...
Are we talking about the sex or the actual snake now?
So this is actually your fault.
No, I didn't fuck the snake out of its cage.
I'm pretty sure you did. That's
no,
the way I heard
it. Fuck it out
of
its
cage. Do you
guys
remember that story about when Chris fucked the snake out of the cage?
Yeah.
Guys, that's not how it happened at all.
That should be the new level. It's like, oh, that dude can fuck the snake out of a cage.
That was not how it happened at all. What I don't, you had the, listen, I don't under, the way that you kept that snake in the terrarium was a piece of rope and a hockey stick, and you had tied it around.
Right.
And so, you know.
So the snake couldn't get out.
I'm sure that was the climax of Anaconda, right? They're like, just get that hockey stick in that rope.
Yep.
The snake's going nowhere.
Everyone knows their
look
powers.
Out, Ice Cube.
So I come back late at night to Will's house, and I get into bed, and I feel this lump of clothes at the foot of the bed. So I kick it a couple times, like, I must have left my bag on the thing. I lift up the covers and I just see these two eyes staring at me.
Shit.
I had been kicking it in the face. I don't know how I didn't get bitten. So I call Will. It's
this is
3 o'clock in the morning, your time.
Let's see if we can recreate the phone call. So it's like 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning in Virginia. And I've been working on Toy Soldiers. And it's a better story if I had an early call, but I don't remember if I did. Let's just decide that I do. So the phone rings because back in those days, kids, you would have to actually get a phone call on the phone in your hotel.
Yep.
That was bolted to the nightstand.
And you can't set those on vibrate or silent.
No, you can't.
Setting that phone on silent just means taking it off the hook.
Right.
Right.
Hook? Well,
which I didn't want to do.
Don't worry about it, kiddo.
So, go grab yourself some penny candy, and I'll tell you all about it.
What's a dial tone?
Let me tell you about a furry little guy who jumps on a triangle named Cubert.
He's a saucy fellow who occasionally says bad words.
Oh, no, he's right.
So, he also, ironically, was chased by a snake.
He was. Yes, he was.
Interesting.
Cubert and I have a lot in common.
So, I answer the phone. You know, usually when the phone rings at that time of the morning, there's not good news.
I just set your VCR clock.
Just wanted to let you know you're a great friend. Okay, thanks.
Hey, Will, 70 and sunny tomorrow.
Thank you. And Chris says,
I think I might have just started with like, Will? Will, it's Chris. And then I think you might have responded with a...
Great. Why are you calling me at 4 o'clock in the morning? I have to get up early in the morning and go have sex with lots of women. Because that's what I do. I'm 18 and a movie star. Some of this may have been dramatized.
So then my response is something like, oh my God, I think it was this thing, and then I kick it because it was by the clothes.
Chris, calm down.
Wait, and it's
calm down.
I can't hear you.
Calm down. Wait, calm down.
It's looking at me.
All right, Chris. Did you fuck the snake out of the cage? Because I've always thought that was a possibility, but never really something I had to worry about happening.
I got it wrong. I thought you fucked the snake back in the cage.
So I had to talk Chris through getting the snake.
No. What happened first was you went...
That may have happened.
And then you said, well, you're gonna have to put him back in the cage. And then I think in my mind I was like, can't we just live like this and I'll just stay upstairs and I'll leave him until you...
Ba-da-ba-da-ba-da.
It's Hardwick and the snake, they're roommates, but things aren't great. The snake is big and Hardwick's scared. Snake's sleeping in his bed.
Did you strangle all my milk out of the container again? I marked it. Yeah, and so Will said, well, you got to get it back in. So he talked me through bagging up the snake with the four corners of the sheet.
And sounds like another sexual move.
Yep, I bagged.
Make sure you bag up the snake before you fuck it right out of the bed.
Dead people that died in their house—that's what we'd do.
You did. Yeah. Matt used to work at a funeral home. That's what you did. You would
bag up the snake with the four corners of the sheet.
Snake,
that's
or
disgusting. Or deceased Matt.
Deceased loved one.
Or
so sorry.
That's fine. He. Listen,
I would have personally been like, I would have not told him. And told the snake he's got a giant terrarium all weekend.
And invite all your snake friends over.
That was a really bad house sitting experience for you. You went to feed my brother's bird, who was an asshole.
Oh yeah, your brother's bird hated me too.
my brother's bird hated everybody.
Yeah.
And my mom left you that note. My mom leaves Chris a note that says, give Maui a grape and he'll be your friend forever. So Chris goes upstairs to give Maui the grape. And Maui's like, get the fuck out of my room. I'm going to kill you.
Yeah, I got charged by a parrot keet or something.
Yeah. And it's weird because you outweigh them by a factor of like 10,000. Well, but still, you run away from them.
Yeah. That happened to me the other day where I got charged at by a chihuahua baring its teeth and barking.
Yeah.
And I just want to be like, you really don't know I could kick you into the ether? Like, you really don't have a concept of that.
Yeah, right into orbit you could kick
But there's something about a bird because they're claws and beak and they're flappy and you don't know if they're going to go for the eyes.
You know why? What? Because they have the movie.
Right.
And what do chihuahuas have? Beverly Hills Chihuahua?
Yeah. Yeah, the worst they're going to do is give you an STD and be on the Kardashians.
Yeah. It's actually worse. I'd rather be attacked by a flock of birds than be on the Kardashians.
I did get attacked by all of your animals.
Everything in the house, yeah.
Your parents were very tolerant with us, though.
They were.
Very cool parents, and we were the obnoxious, snotty kids that they didn't deserve to have all the time.
But we weren't like dick wagons to them. We were just sort of like... we were more just like... having fun at how upset they got so upset when we would just like if you would say shit.
Well, your mom had kitchen rules.
Yeah, if we weren't allowed to cuss in the kitchen, so we figured out that we could stand on the border of the kitchen.
I'm not in the fucking kitchen, Mom.
So maybe the kitchen rules can suck my balls.
Your mother loved us for that.
I think she did. You remember? What? Do you remember when we were at my mom and dad's house and it was before they remodeled the kitchen, so they still had kind of the low fluorescent lights.
Yes.
It said like recessed fluorescent lighting with all the panels over it. And I went into their refrigerator and I took out a stick of butter. And I had learned this trick that you do with pats of butter where you open up the foil pat of butter and then you pull it really tight and shoot the pat of butter up onto the ceiling. So I did that with a stick of butter. Do you remember? And it made the loudest noise in the world. It hit that plastic thing.
Yeah.
And my dad comes running from downstairs. And at this time in my dad's life, my dad is you know, he's a handsome guy, but at this particular time in his life, he had a rat tail. And he wore
Birkenstocks.
Like Birkenstocks and big baggy muscle builder pants.
Yeah, a handsome guy. Pants. Yeah, no, you already said that.
Yeah, he's just describing a handsome
guy. Yeah, sorry, you don't have to be redundant.
He's running downstairs.
He basically looked like Renegade's beach cousin. Like, yeah. Who comes on for an episode because Renegade goes to Venice.
Right. And my dad comes running downstairs and he assesses the situation and says his hilarious catchphrase, "God damn it, Will."
We tormented him endlessly. He would turn his back and we'd be like, "God damn it, Will." He did not take very kindly to that.
But they were really patient with us. They really
they were very cool.
They let us hang out there.
They were very cool because what you have to understand about Will is, that I'm sure that you know, is that, you know, Will was a famous teen actor, and so there were responsibilities that came along with that, and he rejected the entire institution. Like, his mother would hand him a list of interviews that he was supposed to do for like Tiger Beat and Teen Beat and Tiger Teen and Beat Teen and Tiger's Tail or whatever.
And don't forget Teen Beater.
And Teen Beater. That one you would have done.
Yeah.
But the rest of them...
You can only buy it in Holland.
You remember?
And oh, even, that's too far. Okay.
And even then, they're getting it from Indonesia. So Will would go through this list of all these teen magazines and his poor mom and just be like, "Fuck this, fuck this, fuck this, fuck this, done." Like,
but the thing is that I felt so uncomfortable with that kind of attention.
I remember.
And it was so weird and it just felt fake. And I just wanted to be, I wanted to be an actor and a guy who throws butter onto the ceiling.
Yep, that's all.
Which today means you have a reality show.
Yep, that's it.
But back then,
yeah,
it was so weird to me to have that, all of that like attention that I didn't want. And I remember it was so important to my mom that, like, because it was an important part of the career,
right,
to do all that publicity and all of that stuff. And I just didn't want to do it. It just felt weird to me.
Well, you know, some people would have been very thankful to have a fan club called Willpower, is all I'm saying. Yeah,
that's true.
But he really did reject. It was so interesting to watch, because we had, when we were 18, we had annual passes to Disneyland. I mean, I still have an annual pass to Disneyland, but we...
I let mine expire.
You let yours expire?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. It's a lot of the magic is gone for me.
Well, they changed out. There was... at the time we were going, they still hadn't, like, tried to refresh the park at all.
Yeah, it was
so
still kind of like... It was a little bit of a time
You still
machine.
Had the People Mover with the Tron grid, and Space Mountain was... Like, they didn't put the music in your ears and make it all weird.
It was a ride, not a commercial.
Yeah, exactly.
And Johnny Depp wasn't in the Pirates ride.
No.
I mean, unless he was on the boat with you, and then it was awesome. Because you were like, "That guy's on Jump Street.
Jump Street!
I love that show."
I think he'd make a great Wonka. No one ever said that.
Yeah,
no one.
That was weird.
No one ever advanced that theory.
Yeah.
And so, you know, of course... And it was a great place to hang out that one summer that we did it, because, you know, we'd drive down right after traffic at like 7 o'clock. Park was open until 10 or 11 or something. But because Will was who he was, just an onslaught. Like, girls would run up, "Ah!" And then just because he would get uncomfortable, he would scream back in their face, "Ah!"
Because I was a nerd, you know? Like, if any of you here or any of you listening are or were nerds, you know how we react to stuff.
Yeah.
It's in, like... the most inappropriate way possible.
Right.
Right? Like, that's just our defense mechanism. We're like, it's like those animals that, like, it's like a pufferfish.
Right.
You know? I look like a little thing that you could squash, but now I'm going to make myself look like this crazy weird thing that you're going to, I hope to God, run away from.
Right. And they did.
And they did.
Yeah, they did. But it was a really interesting time, and our friend Dave Parker and us, we all went to our first strip club together.
We did. It was the Jet Strip.
Was that what it was called?
Yeah, I don't know if it's still there. It was like just down by the airport. You know that live.
You know it's good.
Was that just was that just like a theme with their pubic hair? Like everyone.
Yeah,
landing strip for everyone.
Or did they dress like planes and then take off the propellers?
Or was everyone?
There was a guy with just.
Yeah, he was just direct with the. This was in the early 90s. The landing strip wasn't going on yet. It was still a triangle.
Would Tiffany be delayed?
Yes.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
That's what happened.
That's what happened. We go into this place in the middle
and we
of the
went
afternoon.
In during and we went in on went to the day shift.
Yeah.
Which is when that's when the really hot girls
2 o'clock
work,
in the
know?
Afternoon.
Yeah. I mean, it was good. Like, that's when you go in.
I don't care what you say, man. It's only $8 for a steak.
At this point, it was very important because at this point, none of us had really had a lot of experience seeing vaginae in person.
Yeah, like the internet didn't even exist back then.
No, and so you couldn't, you know, you kids today can see pussies whenever you want. Back then you had to hunt them down.
We had to hide our Playboys and be afraid of getting caught.
Yeah, so we go to this place at like 2 in the afternoon. We're sitting on the front of the stage. And out comes this stripper, the lovely Cinnamon, ladies and gentlemen. And the lovely Cinnamon, and she bends over and makes her vagina bark in our faces.
God bless her. That's a skilled girl. That's hard to do, apparently.
But then she turns around and looks at Will and goes, "Oh my God, stand by me!" And Will just goes, "Oh fuck." I can't remember if we stayed. I think, did we stay after that?
Not very much longer, I don't think. I think we left. I think we left, and there were some hobos in the parking lot.
No, they were the next shift.
Yeah, right.
How was making Stand By Me? Was it a fun experience?
It really was. I just did I sat down with Rob and Corey and talked about the entire movie and the entire making of the movie. And
Rob Reiner and Corey Feldman.
Yeah. And never mind.
Yeah.
Because the only other Corey I can think of was Corey Heyman. He's dead, and that's sad, so that's not good.
Yeah, no.
Corey from The Simpsons.
Yep, there's that Corey, line.
And Rob Schneider.
Corey. Right.
And
these are some words that rhyme with Corey.
Story.
Allegory.
Montessori.
What's in the paper today?
So it was a really fun movie to work on, and it was a lot like going to summer camp, and except that we were sort of working. Mm-hmm. And Rob always made me feel like I deserved to be there, even though I was just like 12 years old. Mm-hmm. And he did such a good job of casting kids who were very much like our characters that we really just had to say the lines and kind of not get in our own way.
Yeah.
And if we strayed a little bit, he would sort of nudge us back in the right direction. And he took really good care of all of us. And it was a really fun experience working on that movie. We lived in Eugene, Oregon, mm-hmm. and we filmed a lot of it in Brownsville, which is a little town that you can still go to. If you go to one of their visitor centers, they have a map of like, here you can go to locations of Stand By Me.
Oh, that's
so
awesome.
A few years ago, Anne and I took the kids on a road trip up to visit her family in Oregon, and I made them go to Brownsville. So imagine like, come on kids, we're going to look at vacation slides. Come on kids, we're going to go to a town that's 25 minutes off the highway that we've been on for 8 hours already, and you're gonna watch me have a nostalgia quake. And we walked
Daddy
around.
Was in a movie, kids.
What's
put down your Game Boy.
What's Chopper really like?
A method actor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So he had to have a like kind of like a ball fluffer. So there was just, we actually got this guy who had really big, he had a medical condition, huge distended balls,
uh-huh.
and he would just sort of run around.
Oh, HDB?
Yeah, and just sort of run around outside of, in fact, I think it was Griffin Dunn, would run around back and forth in front of his cage to get him worked up, and then he would run after me. But he was a consummate professional, and it was really sad when he finally overdosed on on things that dogs overdose on. I'm
chocolate,
onions,
chocolate.
But we had, it was really important to all of the adults that we did kid stuff.
Yeah.
When we were up there, so there was a mall in Eugene, and it had indoor water slide, and like you know those tube water slide things. So they were called hydro tubes, and there were like four of them, and you could buy a wristband for a half an hour or whatever, and just like go upstairs and ride down the thing, and go upstairs and ride down the thing, and that was really really fun. So the day that we shot in the swamp with the leeches, we were like, we're going to the hydro tubes after work because it's going to be fun. So we go there, and the leeches during that scene kept falling off of our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
So they used this like contact cement stuff to make them stick to our bodies. And then they mixed it with like some makeup and things like that. And we were just like so ready to go to the hydro tubes that we didn't take our makeup off before we went there. So we go up and we're like, you know, we have our towels and stuff and we're like, yay, we're ready to go. We've been listening to Wham the whole way here. And like, we're we're excited to jump in the tube. And like the lady in the thing looks at us and she's like, y'all have leprosy. You can't come in.
like just so matter of factly.
Yeah.
Ah, we got some leper kids.
Yeah. And we're like, no, we're actors. It's fake. And she's like, what's going to make everybody very uncomfortable? You can't come in. You have to
no,
leave.
No, this is the famous scene from Stand By Me. Damn it, it's not out yet.
Fuck.
You don't know that yet.
Yeah.
But your kids are going to love it.
Bravo.
Thank you.
Thank you. If you haven't read the letter that Chris wrote as Doc Brown to Marty, you really have to go to his website and find it. I don't remember how it happened, but we were trading emails, mm-hmm. and you signed off an email like, yours in time, Dr.
Emmett Doc Brown.
Emmett Doc Brown. And then I made some ridiculous Marty McFly response to that. And then Chris sent me this huge rant about what an asshole Marty was for not coming back in time to save him. And it's so funny. And he's like, you had a fucking time machine. You couldn't have said it 5 minutes earlier or come back a day ahead. Or I forget exactly what it was, but it's super, super funny. And I was like, dude, you got to put that on your blog.
And I did. And at the time, it was, you know, it was one of the most popular things that I ever had put on the blog was an open letter from Doc Brown to Marty McFly.
It's like, oh, super funny.
I could read it. Nah, that's too long.
all right. That's but all right. They have the internet, so they can
I don't
go
understand.
Find it themselves.
So they call people on the phone?
Yep.
I'm still trapped in time.
Yep.
but it was funny because, you know, like the leeches is a perfect example because people, I remember, would always come up to you, and if they weren't shouting at you about Star Trek, it was, leeches!
Right.
Or
train.
I remember one
train,
time.
Yeah.
One time we were at a 50s diner. It was like Mel's Diner or something in Pasadena. And you could
what was that? It was the Rose City Diner.
The Rose City Diner.
Rose City Diner on is it was that on Raymond? On Fair Oaks.
Fair Oaks, yeah.
Yeah, on well Fair done. Oaks and Green Street.
You win a thing.
She wins going home with me because that's my wife.
Oh, that's awesome. You win our Fuck the Guest contest. You win our, that's your wife, you win our legally bound to fuck the guest contest.
Good thing. Good
Honey,
thing
I put
wife.
A snake in a terrarium next to the bed. It's going to be a great night.
We are going to fuck this snake so far out of that terrarium. We were at this 50s diner and they have the little jukeboxes at the table. And it was 5 cents to play a song, and of course,
this was you and James did this.
Yes, my friend James,
oh,
and we found the "Stand By Me" was on there, and so for 50 cents,
it just kept going.
It would end, and so like the first time it played, Will's like, "Oh fuck you guys, come on man," and like people are looking around, and then it just sort of ends, and then all of a sudden there's a pause, and you hear. And you see there's a little bit of relief, and then you hear, doom, 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 doom. And he's like, what the fuck? Like after like the sixth time. I think we ended up leaving.
Yeah, we did. We just left, and it was still playing as we left.
Still be playing to this day.
That song follows me around, man. Like, I hear it everywhere. Because it's about me. It's not that it's a great song that people
it's all about
listen
you.
To. It's all about me. But and not just that version, but like there are lots of cover versions. And I'm blanking on the name.
It'd be really funny
Bad
if you
Religion.
Were psychotic and just every song you heard, that's what you heard.
That,
you're like,
yeah.
I can't believe Lady Gaga covered Stand By Me. You're like, that's Poker Face, dude. That's not... Stand By Me, Stand By Me.
I hear it everywhere, all the time. And the video that they made us do is on YouTube. And if you want to just see like how not coordinated I am, because they were like, look, all you have to do is sort of shuffle this way and snap your fingers, and shuffle this way and clap your hands. And I was like, cannot do it. I can roll funny dice. I'm really good at that.
I can roll for initiative, or
right.
I can get a damage.
I can
damage.
Design a dungeon on some graph paper in a matter of minutes and populate it with appropriate monsters for whatever level you choose, but I cannot dance. That's how I talked when I was a kid. I had a lot of speech therapy. And vocal cord scrapings.
When you... I don't know if I ever saw... What was The Curse?
The Curse was the worst movie I ever made.
But you were like tiny, tiny kid, right?
It was right after Stand By Me.
Was it in between Buddy System and Stand By Me?
No. It was between Stand By Me and Star Trek.
Okay.
They backed a dump truck full of money up to our house, more money than we'd ever seen in our lives. Beep, that's the noise it made. That is exactly the noise it made. And they were just like, can we just put this on the driveway? And I was like, well, I guess it's not a windy day. and then it was pitched to me as like a sci-fi movie, and they turned it into just like a really shitty exploitive horror movie, and it was awful. And I think it really stalled my acting career. In addition to being an absolutely miserable, awful, like painful, suffering experience to work on, because we filmed it in Italy. They didn't respect labor laws. They didn't respect SAG. We were so we were just so inexperienced at that time that they totally took advantage of me and my family. And it was just awful. And
everybody has to suck my dick to come into country. Eh?
Yeah. It's like, wait a minute.
You're not the
suck my dick guy. I already did that.
Oh no, I am his assistant. You suck both our dicks today.
Again?
Yes, you want the stamp on the passport? I don't know. I mean, it's up to you.
I can make your life really hard.
Speaking of really hard.
And then I came back, and at that time, so I went off and did The Curse, and River went and did like Mosquito Coast and Running on Empty and did really good movies that really made him a legitimate actor in the eyes of the entertainment industry. And I had gone and done this great breakout movie and then followed it up with a piece of shit.
Mm-hmm.
And it took years to kind of like take the career airplane and pull it out of that, you know,
nosedive. The meta effect of The Curse was The Curse.
Yes. Yeah. I wish that I had done like the Have a Career. Like that would have been a great movie.
So what are some other movies back then that you really wanted that you got close on that were like ended up just being huge?
Christmas Story?
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. I actually saw, I knew Peter Billingsley when we were kids.
Yeah.
And I saw him in the waiting room, and I was like, that's the kid, that's the guy. And I was like 9. I'm like, that's the guy.
Did you do that at the...
fuck.
Did you do that at the Dirt Bike Kid audition too? Did you go, nope. That's the guy.
Yeah.
Dirt Bike Kid.
Yep.
Anyone know? Yeah. Anyone ever see the Dirt Bike Kid?
Yeah.
Someone has.
Wow. It's a magical dirt bike, and it's Peter Billingsley. Don't worry.
Yeah, well, now they'll find it.
So watch it.
Yeah. Yeah. I really wanted Monster Squad.
Wolfman's got nards.
Kick him in the nards.
I really, really, really wanted Goonies.
Yeah, of course.
Because it just sounded like you're doing a movie in an amusement park.
Yeah.
That sounded rad. And I was cast in a movie called Valmont, mm-hmm. that Milos Forman directed, and the producers of Star Trek would not let me out of my contract for one episode to go and work on the movie.
Yeah.
And they actually kind of changed the production schedule around to, like, I was not going to be in the first episode that they were taping at the beginning of the season. So I would have gone and worked in that movie, and I would have played the Dauphin, and, like, it was great. Like, I went to New York, and I auditioned for Milos Forman, and he was like, all right, here's what you're going to do so that, you know, like, I want you to be in my movie, and the studio doesn't, but here's how you're going to do it. And he like directed me. So I got to sit and have like an acting workshop with him. It was amazing.
Whoa.
And I was really young at the time. I was only like 14 or 15, but I knew enough to know that it was a gift to go mm-hmm. and do that. And we came back, and they said, oh, listen, we've changed the production schedule now, and you're actually in the first episode, and you're under contract, so you can't do the movie. And we had to pass on the movie, and then they wrote me out of the episode right before production began.
Oh.
And it was a really fucking shitty thing to do. And that actually, more than anything else, is why I wanted to get out of the contract to be a regular on Star Trek,
mm-hmm.
because I loved the cast and I loved the show, and I, you know, I was a nerd. It was like awesome to do that, right? But I just felt like that was such a tear. You don't do that to somebody,
right?
When you're like partners working on a thing, you do that to somebody where you're like, hey, and guess what? I own you now,
right?
And it was so horrible that was sort of like the beginning of the end for me.
Yeah, and then because I remember after that, you were like, Yeah, they basically just had me come in and say, aye, aye, Captain, and then I fucking sit in my trailer.
Yeah, I was really mad. And I was like, I became very bitter about the whole thing. And like, for like maybe the last, most of the last season that I was on there, I was just, I couldn't let it go.
Yeah.
You know? But I was young and
angry teen.
And young, angry teen, yeah.
They made you a full ensign.
Yeah, that was great.
They threw that into like into the contract. Like that's good for him.
This actually,
and we'll make you full ensign. You know, stick around.
So can I get more money?
No, no. You'll be okay. You'll get a fake rank.
So you think you're doing a bit? You're actually recreating an actual negotiation conversation. So the somewhere around like season three, I think we're all renegotiating, and so the my agent goes to the producers and is like, so you know. We want a raise because this show is immensely popular, blah, 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 blah. And they go, well, listen, there will be no money. But we are willing to promote Will's character to lieutenant. So when my agent calls me and says, so this is what they said, like, what do you want me to do? And I said, will you remind them that it's a television show and the ranks aren't
you
real?
You don't understand. Lieutenant costs thousands of space dollars.
So I was like, and then I got mad and I was like, like, what am I going to do? Hey, car dealership, listen, I would really like to buy this car, and I can't, but I'm a lieutenant now, so come over to the spaceship with me, and we'll, like, go to 10 forward, and we'll put it on my officer's tab.
That would have pissed Worf off.
He never would have stood for that.
I'm only a lieutenant. They're just giving out lieutenants to anyone these days.
When I met Chris, Chris had been in a really bad car accident, and gone through the front windshield of a car because the guy behind him didn't have a seatbelt on. So wear your fucking seatbelts, even if you're in the back
seat. You're in the back seat. Your body can propel the person in front of you into the windshield, it turns out.
That's called physics.
Yep, that's how it works. Momentum, distribution of force.
And so Chris's head.
F equals MA.
Yeah, right through the windshield. And for, gosh, like maybe the first couple of years that I knew you, pieces of glass were coming out of Chris's head all the time.
Yeah, I had all these scars on my forehead.
Just little pieces would come out of his head. And
but then I got rid of those scars when I made a pact with three other teen witches, like in The Craft.
Yeah. And it looks great, by the way.
Thank you very much.
So I played hockey in high school, and I was goalie, and I got hit in the head with a slap shot.
But what's important to tell is that because my forehead was so carved up, Will would come over sometimes and be like, what's up, Worf?
Right. So I got hit in the face and it broke my helmet and it cracked open my skin. The way my doctor described it was like, if you were to take like grab an orange and just pull on that orange as hard as you can until the skin just pops. Mm-hmm. That's what happened to your forehead.
Yep.
So I had 36 stitches in my head and a whole bunch, and it was awesome. Like I had a big, super badass Frankenstein scar that my mom made me get plastic surgery on to get rid of because she's like, it's bad for your career. Yep. And I was like, I'm going to be a tough guy. And she's like, you're not a tough guy, Will. You're never going to be a tough guy.
I mean, I'm like, well, not without down. A scar. I'm pushing you down now and I'm a grown woman.
Yeah. Like, come on, stop it, Mom. I'm convalescing at home, and the phone rings. And by this time in the world, we had this thing called caller ID, which was very expensive, and
thousands of dollars a month.
It was really it was incredible technology. Let you know, you could know who was on the phone before you picked it up.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, so
that
could
cuts
decide,
out all the guesswork.
So you can decide if you're going to talk to them or let them talk to your answering machine.
What? Wait. Yeah. There's a machine that answers your phone a robot?
Yeah. You put a tape in it.
Whatever, and, future boy.
Yeah. And you can have actually recordings of celebrities on that, so they'll think that like James Coco's at your house.
Well, I would put something on like, I'm glad you called, but I'm not home, and I'll be back before too long.
So I pick up the phone because I can see it's Chris, and I'm like, hey, man. And Chris goes, ha! Who's fucking Lieutenant Worf now?
Oh, it was so satisfying. We both had crazy forehead scars at about the same time.
It was great. That's the kind of friendship we've had.
Yeah. I loved... what was the audition process like for Star Trek?
There was like one general casting call with the casting people, and then there was a callback where I went and read for Gene Roddenberry, and I think Rick Berman was there, and Bob Justman was there, and I don't remember who else was in the room, and I was like, that's the guy that made Star Trek. Mm-hmm. And I totally just, I was like Fred Merkel. Go look that up, kids, and you'll be impressed with how clever I am. And I just, I completely blew it. And I walked out, and I ran to a payphone. Mm-hmm. And I said to
you changed into your super suit.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then I flew to my agent's office, and I was like, I totally blew it. Try real hard to get me a call back in. And apparently they had called, and they were like, it was weird. Something was off with him. Bring him back, give him another shot. Mm-hmm. So I went back another time, and then I went and tested for the network.
What was the audition scene?
It was the scene from Farpoint where Riker's like, and then Wesley's like,
running around excitedly, jumping up and down, bouncing on the walls.
Yeah.
In the holodeck.
I don't know if the scene where Data lifts Wesley out of the water and Wesley goes, "Wow!" I don't know if that was part of the scene.
Gee willikers,
you're a robot. So it was just that, and there wasn't a lot to go on, and I found out recently, like in the last 10 years, because I'm old enough now that 10 years can qualify as recently.
Yeah,
and I was talking to David Gerald, and David showed me a memo that he sent to Bob Justman. That he wrote in 1987, where he said, "So listen, I don't think this Wesley Crusher character is a good idea. I think that it's going to alienate fans, and I think it's weird that we have this kid on the spaceship. So if Gene is set on having this character on the show, you need a young actor who can pull off what this character demands, mm-hmm. so that it's not terrible. And since Jackie Coogan is an adult now,
yes."
You should look up Jackie Coogan, kids. You'll be impressed with how clever I am. Then he said, "So I think you should see this kid, Will Wheaton. He was really good in Stand By Me, and the teeny boppers love him, and that'll bring in that audience to the show." Mm-hmm. And that's how I got the audition in the first place.
Wow.
And and David actually emailed me a copy of the memo that he still has. It's the neatest thing.
So
it's
nice.
Just like, wow, that's a cool thing to have.
And you got to be this nerd. I mean, you know, the potential for Wesley was so awesome. Like, because he was a nerdy kid. Like,
yeah.
I
think the great failing with the writing of Wesley Crusher was that the writers in Star Trek never let him fuck up.
Right.
And you never got to see him be the like angsty kid that I was.
Right.
Because Wesley and I were in like totally the same situation. We were kids.
You lived on a star cruiser?
I did. And I almost got promoted to lieutenant. We could have had lunch.
God damn it!
Yeah, sorry. We were both kids who spent all of our time with adults, and we could really relate to them professionally,
yep.
but not personally.
Okay.
And it created this thing where I was like, I want to hang out with you guys. I listened to Depeche Mode. And they were like, yeah, no. That does, what is, that's, yeah, no, we listen oh, to we listen to music that sucks because we're old. except Frakes. Frakes was all about jazz. And Frakes was like, listen to Miles Davis. And I was like, I don't get it. I'm too young. But it really made me feel weird, and it made me feel isolated.
Did he say, how about now? And then he opened his shirt.
Yeah, and I was like, well, I don't like the music anymore, but this whole situation just got a lot better.
Yeah, grooving.
I spent time with people my own age. And I always felt like I had one foot in each kind of like grown-up world and kid world.
I totally felt the same way.
And yeah, so, you know, it's weird.
It was weird. I do remember that you were pretty, like the cast, like everyone seemed to,
they were great. Like they were like a family to me.
You told them the awesome story once where you were shooting a scene and Patrick Stewart, when you were shooting the scene, said something like, "Ensign Crusher."
Oh, I know. Yeah, yeah. You know, Wesley,
In old nautical days, ensigns performed certain favors for their captains.
He's really disarming, you know.
Didn't it go on to something like as blatant as he said, "Ensign Crusher, set a course for Rigel Four, and then come here and give me a blow."
Yes. Yes. Oh my God, I'd forgotten that. Yes. Yes. He is a gentle, gentle lover.
The other thing that I want to talk about is post Star Trek is, wow, we've really, this is great.
How are we doing on the list?
We're doing pretty well, actually. Yeah. We're most of the way through a lot of the stuff I wanted to talk about. Will and I had the distinct pleasure of, so you were living with your parents, in your parents' house at the time, and Jeremy and your sister Amy, and you were 17, 18 years old, but unlike, you know, like you had money, so you could have lived wherever you wanted.
Right.
But I said, hey, my roommate is going to Japan, and I need a roommate. You know, do you want to come live? I was going to UCLA at the time. Do you want to come live in Westwood with me? And you, for some reason, you were like, yes, you came and we lived in this crappy loft apartment.
It was rad.
You could have lived anywhere. And we lived in this shitty Swiss chalet.
Oh, it was great, though. That place on Veteran was awesome.
Yes.
We experienced the a couple of big earthquakes there.
Huge. We had the earthquakes there. We had the riots there.
Remember when the big earthquake that woke us both up, and like I was up in the loft and you were downstairs.
Yeah, we weren't spooning or anything, if that's what you were worried about.
And you were downstairs on the futon, and we both met at the foot of the stairs hopping to put our pants on. And then like the earthquake is over and you looked at me and you're like, why do we put our pants on when there's an earthquake? Like there's an earthquake happening. Quick, put on your pants.
I better put on my earthquake clothes. My best earthquake tie.
Keep a bag of earthquake clothes next to the bed.
Always.
You
That's
never
what they
know.
Say, right?
Yeah. Yeah, right. And the riots, too.
We had the
I
riots.
I had to go to traffic school the day of the riots. And the traffic school was on Santa Monica Boulevard at the 101.
Yep.
So then I drove back to Westwood on the 101. Just these like towers of flame and people, well, having a riot.
Yeah.
And not the good, like, we just won, no justice, no peace riot. Yeah, not the kind of like, yay, we won a contest riot.
Right.
But like, you know, we're angry at you and people who look like you riot.
Yep.
So like it's a bad kind of riot to be in. When you're like a white guy and kind of a nice car, right? So I'm like driving home and it's the longest drive of my life. And I get home and I open the door and Chris is like, thank God you're alive.
I thought you were dead out there.
And then we went up to my girlfriend at the time. We went up to her house and watched LA burn down from her backyard.
Yep.
God, that was weird.
But that was such an interesting time. I remember when you broke up with her.
No, different girl.
That was a different girl.
Different girl.
Yeah. Okay.
You want to do this?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So Will.
I dated a girl, one of my first girlfriends, and it just we were both too young, we were both too immature, and
very volatile relationship.
Yeah, and like if I had had any experience at all dating instead of being on a television show, I would have like figured out after like four or five dates, like no. But I was like, well, we're in a relationship, and we got to make the relationship work.
Basically.
No, you don't, kids. Listen, just don't.
The relationship basically pulled a predator and tried to make a trophy out of Will's soul.
That is a really good way of describing it.
And so for the longest time, first of all, you couldn't even mention her name.
Right.
And if you did, he did it enough times that we started doing it as a chant in unison. You would, because you wanted to make it happen, you would say her name.
Right.
And then this would come out. Don't get me started. Don't get me started. Don't get me started. Fucking bitch, I hate her.
That was our war cry.
So this
did
was
they, did they know
girl.
About? Oh, sorry,
no,
I didn't
no.
want to stop your story.
No, go ahead.
Do they know about when I got my wisdom teeth out?
No, I don't think they know.
I think listeners to your podcast really need to know this story.
Do you guys know about the...
Let me tell you something about Chris Hardwick.
I still feel very bad about
no,
this.
Well, you shouldn't feel bad about it. I'm over it.
Okay.
I had my wisdom teeth out when we lived in the place on Veteran. Mm-hmm. And my parents were like, come home and get better at home. And I was like, no, guys, I'm a grown-up now. I'm going to go to my apartment.
It was all four teeth, right?
Yeah. And so I go back to the place on Veteran. And I'm laying down on the futon watching The Great Escape on Laserdisc.
Mm-hmm. The Criterion Collection.
The Criterion Collection, which is great. And Laserdiscs is like if a compact disc and a record had a baby.
Yep.
That's what a Laserdisc is. So just get that in your head. Mm-hmm. Ask your parents what a record is.
And it was
somehow
less convenient to use.
Yeah.
Yep.
and I'm laying on the futon watching this thing. And Chris explodes into our apartment with two of his friends. And they are as drunk as I've ever seen people in my life. And yeah. I'm an actor.
we had gone down to there was a place called Los Panchos in Westwood Village.
Right.
They had a happy hour every day, dollar beers, and they set out free food. So if you were broke, which I was, you could eat food. For like $5, you could get tanked and eat a bunch of food.
So they come into the apartment and it's just like it's like three Tasmanian devils. Come into the apartment, and Chris comes over. And the thing is, like, back when Chris was still drinking, Chris was one of those drunk guys that loved people and loved stuff.
Yeah,
and was just like, and was even funnier than he is baseline. And
look,
Chris,
I'm not funny anymore because I don't drink. I get it, okay?
I know your music was better before you quit heroin too. And Chris comes up. I'm on the futon. Chris comes up, and he grabs me by my face.
I didn't know.
And he gets right down in my face and he goes, I love this guy!
Will's eyes shot open and a tear...
Actually came out of my head like at the end of Total Recall.
And silent scream.
And it's... Yeah, I mean, it's that scream actually is still echoing. They can't rent that apartment.
No.
Because people walk in and are like, did someone die in here?
It's like how voices get trapped in the radio sphere, yeah. And then you can hear old stuff.
Yeah, that voice is actually on its way to Alpha Ceti, to Centauri Taurus.
Yeah, right it's now. Going, it's they yeah. they actually put it on.
That's a the, real star, not one I made up.
They of course it is, Ensign Crusher.
And you wouldn't talk to me like that if I was a lieutenant. And Chris just sort of backs away. As all the color drains out of his face, and he sobers up long enough to go like, "What's wrong?" And I'm like, "I'm having a woof-woof fever."
Yep.
This didn't make any of them leave.
No.
They continued to stay in the apartment, and the last thing I remember before I finally just like grabbed a handful of pills was Chris peeing out our window.
Yep. That's absolutely true. Absolutely true. Why take 30 steps to the bathroom?
Why would you do that? The window's right there.
Hey, you know what? I don't know what...
Where did people pee before there were bathrooms? Right out
windows. Out of windows.
Bathroom is actually from the Latin bat,
yep.
Which means window.
Yeah.
And ruh, which means everywhere.
And I didn't know what pee looked like going down two stories.
Yeah, and you got to find out that stuff.
I'm glad you brought up bat because one of our young obsessions was with the bat child.
Oh my God, the bat child. We tracked the saga of the Bat Child.
He's 3 feet tall and very dangerous. Very dangerous.
And we tracked the Weekly World News Bat.
Weekly World, yeah.
We would go to the supermarket and buy it,
yep.
And then we would put it on our coffee table. Like, we had multiple issues of the Weekly World News. But we were like, but we wouldn't read just any fucking Weekly World News.
No.
It was the one about the Bat Child.
And then, you're buying the Bat Child, and you're saying to the clerk, like, you guys, I mean, do you have any protection here? I mean, do you know what this guy is capable of?
He escaped.
Yeah.
And was last seen. And I know it says Virginia, but he could probably fly and
they're
get
faster
here.
Than we are.
They're much faster
he's
than we are.
He's just a kid, guys. He's scared.
That's how he lulls you into a false sense of letting him come up and killing you. Yeah. Yeah.
But what was so great about that time in our lives is because we were at about the age, 18, 19 years old, was when we started really finding things that would define our comedic voices later on. Like, you know, Will and I every day would watch the old British Whose Line Is It Anyway. We discovered Ren and Stimpy together. We discovered
Mystery Science Theater
together. We would have MST3K parties.
Yeah.
And at the time, you could only watch Mystery Science Theater once a week. It was on Friday nights from 10 to midnight or midnight to 2. I can't remember. It was on Comedy Central. And so, you know, we would have these Mystery Science Theater parties. And it was a really...
And we would go down to Dave Parker's to watch The Simpsons on Thursday nights.
Yep.
And that was... Those things were they are load bearing pillars in the building that is our comedic sensibility.
Yeah, and we got to experience all that stuff together, and it was after a little while we moved from the Swiss chalet into a snazzier apartment.
It was super snazzy.
I had no business trying to keep up with your financials my car parking job. I couldn't park a Galaxy class Star Cruiser. I could only park cars.
Yeah,
it's a starship. It's not a Star Cruiser, Chris.
You're right. No, you're right. Sorry.
Thank you for saving me that unpleasantness.
Sorry. No, you're right, Matthew.
Will would get 70 tweets.
You're right.
Times a million.
We lived in a snazzy apartment, and Will bought all the snazzy furniture and
at IKEA.
Actually, it was a place called Store.
Was it still Store?
Yep,
then?
Store.
I built a bookcase yesterday to put into my new office, and I got the bookcase at Cost Plus.
Yep.
And I actually said, I bought some other furniture for my office from Crate and Barrel, and I said to the guy, I was like, well, what about this? This is a nice bookcase. You just have to do a little assembly. And I actually said, I'm too old to be assembling furniture. and then I couldn't find one that I liked, so I went to Cost Plus, and I was like, that's a nice bookcase. I'm going to buy that. And it was one that I had to assemble. I assembled it in fucking record time with no mistakes, glancing at the pictograms that seriously look like hieroglyphics on the thing, and I realized that when we were in college, I put so many skill ranks into Allen wrench bonuses that, like, I am a furniture assembly ninja.
I love the pictogram analogy. There's like the hieroglyphics. Like, well, first we need to put tab A into slot B, and then we need to honor Ra.
Right. Make sure that the two holes with Anubis are face down. Do not mistake these for the two holes that are just a jackal.
How do we keep building a pyramid? Is that a sarcophagus? That's a couch. But it's called
Konlishmikdenbaka.
Yes. It's the KH. It's that sound. But we live together, and then Will, in classic nerd fashion... I mean, the thing that people need to understand about you, and I think... You know, as nerdy as I feel like I am, you way out nerd me. I mean, you...
Yeah, you were cool for a while. And not in like a cool kid way, in like a, wow, Chris is cool kind of way. Like when you started doing comedy and you were in the comedy club at UCLA, I was at Chris's very first ever stand-up comedy show ever at Sprow.
I remember it.
How was it?
It was really, really funny.
Yeah.
And I was... The only joke that I remember was something about how K-Lite, actually, if you said the letters right, was clit.
Oh, there was a radio station in Los Angeles called KLIT.
Right.
K-Lite, yeah.
And that it was appropriate for love songs, but nobody could ever find it or something like that. I forget. It was really, really, like when you're 20, you're like, oh my God, he's saying what we're all thinking.
I think it went somewhere else, like... It was like that. The person who ran the station was a giant disembodied clitoris.
Right.
Like, we must play adult soft rock. And Furman did stuff there too. Yeah. And
I was still ultra nerdy through all that. I was editing videos on my video toaster.
You had the video toaster, which the video toaster was a much more compact video editing system.
Yes. Yeah. So imagine Final Cut Pro. Except it takes two entire computers to run it, three monitors, and you have to get this thing called a time-based corrector to connect video to it to make it work. That was super-duper state-of-the-art and replaced like close to $100,000 worth of high-end studio equipment.
You could store up to 2 megabytes of information.
Yeah. And the install was only 37 floppy disks.
So Will, I mean, you know, Will is always ahead of the curve on every nerd thing. I remember seeing you when you used to do comedy shows at Acme, and you were doing the J. Keith Van Stratton show for a while, like in 2001 or 2002. You said, "Yeah, I'm doing this thing called blogging," and I'm like, "What?" You're like, weblogging. It's like a weblog. It's like a diary, and a lot of people read it. I don't know. It's just something I do. And so you were the first blogger I ever met. You might have been the first blogger. I'm not 100% sure.
But, I don't think I was. I think Doug Searles was doing it longer than
me. So at this point in our lives, Will decides, I hate the entertainment business. Fuck everything. He'd become friends with the video toaster people because, of course, they were Star Trek nerds.
Yeah, well,
they
gave this is you back. This is before, and this is in about 93.
Right. They gave him a unit, a video toaster unit that he had in the apartment. Will had just come out of his I'm going to be a DJ phase. I mean,
dude,
the thing
I was a good DJ. Shut up. I was an awesome DJ. I'm good at things that start with D. DJ, DM. Yep. My DMX impression is ballin'.
Really? Up in here? Up in here?
Up in everywhere.
Okay.
That doesn't sound like DMX.
Well, I'm not doing it right now.
I'd like to talk to DMX for a minute.
Fools, I ain't gonna waste DMX on your sorry white ass.
Where did Will go? So yeah, Will had just come out of it. I mean, the thing about a guy who was very creative and had a lot of creative energy, but also had a lot of money, was that Will could go out and buy like an insane DJ setup and crates of albums and spin records.
But that's the thing, like everybody else that was like I never did drugs.
No.
And like we went to raves because it was fun, but never did drugs there.
No.
Like, that was like we weren't fuck ups.
No.
You know, we were nerds and like I was a nerd with money, so I was like, I want to have fun computers and I want to have, you know, I think it'd be fun to learn how to do this thing.
Yeah.
And that was you know, rather than like spending all my money on heroin and dying.
Yeah.
It was, I think I made a good choice.
I think you did too. And I was a consummate beer nerd. I nerded out over beer so much.
It's because of you and your friend, his name was Steve. He brought a Rogue's Red Ale to the place on Veteran. And
oh, that
might
have been Steve Callahan.
And I was like, maybe it was.
Steve Callahan, now co-EP of Family Guy.
What?
Yeah. He was in the UCLA Comedy Club. He was my orientation counselor at UCLA.
Glad he calls me all the time. he brought that over, and I remember because I was like, beers for race cars and rednecks. Bring me another rum and Coke.
Yeah, and then we introduced you to all sorts of crazy brown ales and Newcastles.
That's what beer tastes like?
Yeah.
And I've been struggling with it ever since.
I ruined you! But Will decided, I'm going to give up acting. I'm going to move to the video toaster headquarters in Kansas.
In Topeka, Kansas.
And he just abandoned your life for like a year and you moved to Kansas.
For like 3 years.
Was it that long?
Yeah.
Took all the awesome furniture with him. I had to move out of the apartment. I had to move out of the apartment that where we had landlords with a very sweet, mentally challenged grown-up son who recognized Will and would knock on our door every day, and you'd look through the peephole and you'd see him standing there and you'd open the door and he'd just look at you, whether or not it was me or him, and just go, "Are you Will? Are you Will?"
We just both started saying yes.
Yes, yeah.
And that'd make him really happy and he'd go away.
It made him happy, yeah. So, and then you moved to Kansas, and I don't know what happened in that 3 years because we didn't really talk that much. What did you do?
I worked in their marketing department. I went to like trade shows, and I was really excited about that. I was really excited by the idea of the video toaster. I was really, really excited by the idea of removing a major barrier to entry for creative people.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had seen that the entertainment industry didn't necessarily reward good ideas. And I'm sure that's hard to believe if you turn on television today.
Yep.
But
it is so hard to keep up with the Kardashians.
It's really hard. So I had I thought it was a great idea, and I wanted to sort of like subvert the system, and we did that. But we were about 5 years ahead of being able to put it online.
Mm-hmm.
If we had done this, if YouTube had existed back then, we would be having this conversation on the top deck of my private yacht, on my way to the other private yacht.
With all these people, too?
No.
Oh, okay.
Are you kidding me? You
private!
Even,
private!
Yeah, yeah. You guys wouldn't be here, that's for sure. Nobody would be. I would have very fancy things, but it was a great time.
And you would be banging girls on your yacht, and then you get done, you'd be like, "Yo, you just got the crusher."
That's right.
You would say yo.
I would totally talk like that. I would, and I'd wear a sideways like a Louis Vuitton leather hat.
Yep.
And that would be my flavor.
Yep.
Right. I would like that's what I would do. Right. And that's how people would know that I was rich. Right.
Yep, that's right.
But one of the things that was really important to me at that time, and I don't know if we ever talked about this, I became aware when I was about 20 that I had been really angry for a number of years. And I felt like I had kind of lost who I was. I had struggled really hard to make it as an actor, and I hadn't. And I didn't really know who I was, and I didn't really like myself. And I thought, look, I have an opportunity to leave everything I know and kind of start this other life in a totally different way, at a totally different level, and kind of work my way up. Because if this acting thing doesn't work out, I'm going to have to be able to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And I still felt creative, and I loved computers, and I felt like I had something to contribute to the company. So I left and went to do that. And Paul Montgomery was the president of the company, and right, one of the last times I talked to Paul before he died, way too young, he said, you know, I could tell when I offered you the job that you needed to grow and it wasn't going to happen if you were still in LA.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons I offered you this job was because I could see that it was going to help you. You know, you were either going to grow out of it and go on to be, you know, closer to awesome, or it would defeat you and you would go back and you would suck. Mm-hmm. But you had to, like, you know, be in a place where you could experience that. And after a couple of years, I felt like I had really worked out a lot of, like, why I was so angry about things. And I had sort of gone and experienced that the life that I had wasn't that bad. And I started to really miss being an actor. I missed performing.
I remember having a conversation with you where you said that. You're like, I really want to be doing that again.
I felt like I wasn't doing the right thing. Like, I wasn't doing what I was meant to do. And, you know, there's this, neurologically, there's this thing that creative people have. And it's sort of like, I joke that, like, we're broken. We have that thing that makes us do this stuff.
Oh, yeah. I think comics are the same way. It's a genetic defect.
Right.
Where you have to get up and make strangers like you.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, it's the same thing for actors. Like, I have to tell stories. And if I don't have a good story to tell, I will make one up so that I
like
have
about
a story
how
to
a
tell.
Fat kid gets even with a bunch of people by throwing up on them.
Something like that.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I won't give it a satisfying ending. But you know, fuck you. You got a story. And then when I came back, I went. My agents were like, "Yay, you're back! Go out on auditions." And I said, "You know, I can't do that. I have to go to drama school. I've gotten this far on instinct. And I feel like I need some technique. I feel like I need some training." And then I went to drama school for a couple of years.
Wow.
And it's remarkable. I'm really lucky. I'm really, really, really lucky that I have any kind of career at all today, because nobody can stop a career like I did and then come back unless you're somebody like Jodie Foster.
Right.
And I am not like Jodie Foster, you know?
You like girls.
I am aware of my limitations as an actor, and I'm aware of what I can do, and I'm aware of the opportunities that I will be given. There's roles that I know I could do really well in, but I'm not going to get them because I'm just not at the place where you need to be to get those roles. So I do the very best that I can in the roles that I am given, it's really terrific that I can do these things.
I want to talk about this next phase really quickly, but I just first want to check with Jonah. Jonah Ray, you are running the Meltdown show tonight. Do you need to get over there?
Well, this is awkward.
No, I'm just saying. I just don't.
Do you have a better party to go to?
Jonah runs a show.
What is it? The Lieutenant's show?
Yep. Sorry, you should have taken the deal.
Fuck.
I just want to make sure you're okay. I mean, well, if you need to leave, it's not. I don't want you to feel bad if you have to go run your show. Is all I'm saying. I can cut this part out.
And then I'm just gone.
Oh, no, this part's staying in.
This part could stay in.
Kind of like how when you watch Inside the Actor's Studio with the Simpsons cast, and then half of them just disappear halfway through, and no one says anything about it.
Wait, where'd she go?
What happened to Julie Kavner?
It's like when your brother gets in trouble, and it's awkward when your dad's
It's not awkward. I just want to make sure that you're not like, oh, shit, people are relying on me to run my show.
They're fine.
Okay, all right. I just want to make sure. I'm just trying to make sure everyone's cool and taken care of.
Hey everyone, I'm Stan.
Yay!
That's the only reason I wanted to stay. For that moment.
To hear that you're no longer on this podcast. Oh, okay, you're rehired.
Yay!
You get fired every live podcast.
Yeah.
John Scalzi said that his old dog, Cody, loved his wife so much that Chrissy could go outside and she'd be gone for like 5 minutes and come back inside and Cody would be like, oh my God, you're back. And he said that he had been off on a book tour for like 3 weeks. Chrissy had gone to the airport and had been went to the airport to get John, brought John home. She was gone for like an hour. And the dog was like, oh, good, John, you're back. Chrissy, oh, my God, I thought you were out. And he said that the greatest day of that dog's life would be a day where Chrissy just walked in and out of the house all day long.
Just all day.
So it's like, you're fired.
This is sort of like if you're a goldfish, where they have no memory. Then you see, like, your friend's died, and you have to experience it every time you swim around. Oh, my God, Tim, what happened? He was so young. Jesus Christ, Tim, somebody get the paramedics. Fuck Tim! I'll be right back, buddy. I'll be right back. Why him? Why anyone?
Ooh, food.
Ooh. Food flakes.
Can you imagine dead fish on one side and food on the other
side?
Like the most bipolar fish in the world.
Yay! Oh!
God damn it! I'm going to throw up from eating so much and from feeling so sad.
It recycles. He throws up the food. It comes out in flake form. He gets sad, eats it again, throws it up again.
That's like perfect ecosystem.
It
that
really
fish
is.
Just has everything he needs.
It is.
Except happiness.
He gets the happiness when he eats.
That's right. And then it goes away again.
Yep. Yeah, that's a very zen way to...
Maybe we're all that goldfish, guys.
Oh, shit.
This is the food, you guys. This is the food. And we're going to go out in the streets and see the death. But what I do want to talk to you about is that because your career now is on fucking fire. And what I love about what you do, and you really were inspirational to me for why I decided to, you know, you were a guy that sort of made me realize like, oh, you know, if you like nerdy things, you can just go make a career out of that if you want to. That never occurs to people because you have this idea. I mean, it does more now, but when we were growing up, it was sort of like, well, you know, you kind of do.
I don't want to do that. That's what I love. I'm going to keep that.
Yeah, that it's not.
I'm going to go do that thing that I hate.
You don't think of it as like you can do that as a job because you don't think of it as a job. And so, you know, you start this blog and then I know you lost a bunch of entries, right? Didn't you?
Yeah.
Was it you were on a platform?
Yeah, I had a huge database meltdown.
And you lost a bunch of entries, and you started it again, and you kept going, and you turned it into a book, and then you turned that into another book, and you know, and really, you've managed to build this career off of stuff that you care about, and what's great now is that people know. I think people know who you are, as opposed to just the angry kid inside, you know?
It's been really weird, man. Like, I try not to think about it too much because I don't want to be like, you know, Lenny with the rabbit.
Right.
You know? And it's really easy.
Are you
to
Will?
Just,
crush.
You know, crush, yeah. And I don't want to think about it too much because I don't want to... I have this joke with my wife where I'll say like, you know, I'm kind of a big deal. and I just mean it. I just mean it as a joke. And I'm actually just doing my best Nathan Fillion as Captain Hammer impression when I do that. And by the way, when you have Nathan on your show, if you ever want me to forgive you for not having me just come hang out and sit in the room when you had Matt Smith on your show,
okay,
you better bring me over to just come over, hang out, and be like, oh, that's my weird friend who sits in the corner and drools. And drools in excitement because he's in the same room as you. That's
his
job.
Are you Nathan?
Are you Nathan?
So I don't know. I'm really grateful. And I'm glad for the opportunities to work. And the coolest thing is I've been able to kind of reach out to people and I don't know, show people that self-publishing is possible and doing what you love and making a living at it is possible. And a lot of this came from raising children.
Yeah, because when you married Anne, who's awesome.
Yeah,
I was at your wedding. I remember.
I remember some of it because it was when I was still drinking.
It was a good wedding.
Yeah, it was a really fun wedding. And
so she had two kids.
Anne had two sons, and you.
I raised them.
You raised them, and now they're dudes.
Yeah.
And they're pretty cool dudes.
Yeah, and Ryan, Anne's older son, asked me to adopt him a couple of years ago, so I did.
And you were like, whoa. Like,
slow down, buddy. We got some boundaries here. no, it was awesome. He said, I owe a lot of who I am to you. I love the things I love because of you.
Yeah.
And you've been a dad to me my whole life. Even when I didn't make it easy for you to be a dad to me, and I want your name, and I want you to be my dad. And I was like,
ah, and he was like, woo-hoo! Not anymore, pussy.
But I saw these things, you know, being a parent really changes you. And, I saw these things that just seem sort of like common sense, like just fucking be nice to people.
Yeah.
Like, just be kind.
Yep.
And be honest. And have your word mean more than your signature on a contract. And everything that is worth doing is hard. And I try to impart all of these things to my kids, and then that just sort of started affecting my writing. And that was all distilled down to my PAX keynote where I said, don't be a dick.
Yep.
And then I saw, like, I don't know, months after that, I was reading Xbox forums and people were quoting that in their signatures. And people were quoting it in their signatures on the PAX forum. And then people started calling it Wheaton's Law. And I'm like, well, it's kind of like, I'm an atheist, but that's kind of like Jesus's law. <You know>? It's a good law.
Don't be a dick.
Don't be a dick. And those are the things that are really great. And I'm incredibly grateful that I can do what I love. I can feel like I'm good at it. I can, you know, like, I just entertain people, you know? Like, I'm the first against the wall when the revolution comes, you know?
Right.
Nobody cares.
Right.
You know, they're like, do you have any skills that matter? I'm like, oh, I could rouse them to think what you want them to think.
I could roll up some characters for you to use.
That would be good. So I just try to not fuck it all up.
Yeah.
And when I have an opportunity to inspire somebody, I do my best to rise to that challenge and honor the opportunity.
That's great. And I really feel like you did, and you were the first, like, you got on Twitter before anyone else.
I was on Twitter so long ago, these like social media douchebags were writing articles about how you were supposed to use Twitter.
Yeah.
So my response to it was I wrote an article of my own wherein I said, here's how you use Twitter. However you fucking want to. And whenever someone says, this is the right way to use Twitter, and if you don't follow back, you're not doing it right. What they're actually saying is, this is going to be huge, and here's how I can benefit from you using it in a way that serves my core business.
Right.
And I made a lot of enemies among the SEO douchebags.
Right.
And listen, I'm really happy to, like, I'm proud. That's a like achievement unlocked.
Well, I remember right when, you know, I came into Twitter after you did, naturally, like every kind of nerd thing. And then there was that moment where you started getting massive amounts of followers.
Oh,
and I remember seeing your tweets where you were like, I have 90,000 people following me now.
It was like 30,000, 50,000, 90,000.
Yeah. And you kind of were like, whoa, 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 whoa. I don't, like, I could see, even in just the short tweets, there was like performance anxiety.
Yeah.
Like,
it's like, don't say penis, don't say penis, don't say penis, penis. Yeah, so I wrote this thing. It's like, how I'm going to disappoint you.
Yeah,
like,
oh yeah, I remember,
like, don't,
that. Yeah.
Don't follow me on Twitter, it's going to suck.
Yeah.
Here's why.
But, you know, I think, and I certainly feel like this for me too, it's been a great way to, you know, I think it really connected you to like-minded people. It did what it was supposed to do, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know, to see all the support, like when you popped up on Big Bang Theory, and, you know, I mean, you're now a geek legend. Like, you're someone, and I hope you understand this, you are someone that, and I know you don't want to hear it, but I know you're someone that little kid would look up to and be like, oh, I want to be like that guy.
Oh. Yeah.
No.
What he's really saying is, will you adopt him?
No, I'm just thinking about that. Like, you know, you should, when you're an adult, you should be the person that young you would have looked up to.
Well,
like that's a great challenge, though. Like if you can do that, not like look, I crush things, well, you know, whatever. But you should be like, if there was that guy who like inspired you, you know, that person who like, I just wrote a thing about this recently. There was a librarian that turned me into a reader.
I want to be with the guy who crushes things.
And okay, well, no, but I think that's cool. Like if I could be a guy, like I would be Han Solo.
Yeah.
I'm never going to be Han Solo. It's not going to happen.
You're not rogue. You're not. Well,
no. Listen, the truth is, I'm Luke Skywalker who wants to go to Tosche Station to pick up some power converters. That's. I'm never going to be Luke Skywalker. I may be Luke Skywalker in the tree on Dagobah, but I'm never ever going to be Luke Skywalker in the trench on the Death Star. I'm certainly not going to be Luke Skywalker holding onto the aerials at the bottom of the Cloud City. Like, I'm never going to get to be that guy. I'm a whiny Luke Skywalker with the flappy hair and the twin suns on Tatooine. And that's okay, though, because I know who I am.
Yep. I kind of feel that same way too. Like, no, I'm Luke Skywalker who just stayed behind to take care of the farm. Yeah. Like, you guys go ahead. You guys go ahead.
I do this thing in Beggar's Canyon. It's awesome.
We're good. Biggest
chicks dig it.
Biggest moisture farm on Tatooine. Yeah, I got some womp rants I'm gonna shoot. Yeah, I'm good.
Well, not much bigger than a meter.
Yeah.
I don't care if that R2 unit is a bad motivator. I'm not intimidated by that. I can take care of that shit. Come on, I'll give you an oil bath. Come back to my place.
Wow, Luke Skywalker.
Yeah. That's right. I have weird daddy issues, but that's okay. I'm sure it'll all get resolved. I hang out with this old guy who lives really far away that everybody says is weird, and he's always like making me move stuff with my mind.
Whatever, but, you know, he's
whatever.
Fine.
It's cool.
He wears a robe.
Yeah, he's... He's always swinging this thing around. It looks like a giant cock, but like
it's not.
But it's not.
It's like,
not what it is. It's like we sword fight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's
but
probably
it's not what you think.
Some kind of like. I mean, it's a saber. It's like a.
Yeah,
it's like
yeah,
a saber.
It's like it's fencing.
Yeah,
it's like dick fencing. What's wrong with that?
Dick fencing. It's
what's
like
weird.
A, it's like a,
we live on a desert planet. What else are we?
What are we gonna
do?
It's like a dick made out of light. All right,
yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah, it's awesome. You're just jealous because your dick doesn't light up.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, your dick is not both particle and wave. Good
yeah,
for you.
Yeah, I'm really proud of you, Mr. Solid Meat Dick. Whatever.
Mr. Solid Meat Dick.
That sounds like an old ELO song. Mr. Solid Meat Dick.
Solid Meat Dick.
And this week, number 5 on the charts.
Is that Don on the phone? I want to sign those pictures.
Get Don on the phone and tell him I want a goddamn concerted effort that I don't have to do a fucking death dedication
coming out of an up-tempo fucking record.
Yeah, and where are the pictures that I ordered?
That's Casey Kasem spinning out of control. Sure. We sometimes forget there are other people.
We do that. Whenever I do Wootstock, Paul will turn to the audience and he'll say, not all of this is for you. Some of this is for
us. Oh my God, and Wootstock is crushing it. Like, I've done 2 or 3 Wootstocks.
Yeah, you killed at the Wootstock that we did at Largo.
Largo was a blast, and thank you, and Comic-Con was a blast.
Yeah.
And then I was the... Where I heard they turned away Joss Whedon at the door.
Fucking tools.
We were performing at this venue, and... I think Jed came with it. Was it Jed?
Was Joss, Jed, and Marissa.
And they came in this venue where they did Wootstock was used to having, I don't know what.
It was like a rock show.
It was
venue.
A rock club, and so they were, yeah.
Bikers and punkers, yeah.
And so,
I was like, cool, I would have come here when I was 18.
So Joss Whedon and Jed show up, and I don't know, they're not on the list, or the show's already started or something, and they don't let them in.
And we had told them, listen, we know Joss is coming, so just, you know, let him in. And I don't know. I think that maybe the bouncer couldn't read.
Right.
So I think that might have been part of it. And I think, I'm really confident that that none of his bookmarks are unrelated to porn and tap out.
Yep, that's right.
So it's very unlikely that he actually was familiar with Joss or anything like
He's
that.
He's gonna pound that Rockstar energy drink out of a douche right after he fucks his Ed Hardy T-shirt at Dickhead Camp.
Yeah.
It's an old comedy bit. But they turned away Joss Whedon, and then we were all heartbroken when we found out after
the
show.
Yeah, not because we were bummed that he missed the show, but because we were like, wait, we could have hung out with Joss Whedon?
Yeah, we could have hung out with Joss, and then literally trying to plot the nerd assassination of the bouncers. Like, you don't even know what you just did!
Yeah.
And then we imagine like what would have happened if we had known it was going on and said to like 700 people, however much it was, guys, Joss Whedon's outside and the bouncers won't let him in. Would you like to help out? And then just
Internet vigilante squad assemble.
And then you just see like what would happen is just like the fire ants would devour the bouncer, all the nerds, and then come away with this skeleton that would collapse.
It would have happened.
It would have happened so fast yeah.
that the skeleton would have still been standing, and yeah. then it would have collapsed, revealing Joss behind it.
Yep, exactly.
And then we all would have cheered.
Yeah,
and then the show would have gone on.
Just like in Piranha, when Jerry O'Connell gets eaten from the waist down. Now he had a waist down when you guys did Stand By Me, right?
Yes. So I was up in Vancouver working on Eureka when Piranha came out, and I was at dinner with Niall Mader and Neil Grayston.
Okay.
And Niall plays Zane and Neil plays Fargo, and we were having a really, really great dinner. I love Vancouver. It's probably my favorite city in the world.
Vancouver's.
It's the thing about downtown Vancouver is that like you cannot swing a hockey stick without hitting an amazing restaurant.
You're going to say you can't swing a hockey stick without hitting another hockey stick.
That's funnier. That's why you're a comic and I'm not. I'm going to punch that up and resubmit it on Rewrite Now.
All right.
So we were having just a really, really great dinner, and we had decided that we were going to go see Scott Pilgrim versus the World, mm-hmm. but it was only playing at one theater that was kind of a hassle to get to, and none of us really wanted to see it none of us wanted to see it enough to like, you know, go on that quest.
Neither did the rest of the world, apparently.
So then we decided, okay, well, we'll just go see Inception up at the Scotiabank because that's closer. But fuck, Inception starts at 10 and it's a 3-hour movie and I don't want to do that. And oh, you know what else starts at 10? Piranha 3D. And
did you guys eat a lot of spicy foods?
Yeah,
we were like,
only a fucking jerk would see that.
These flatulent youths want to come in and see a fish movie.
Being propelled by their farts.
And then there's this little pause where it's like, guys, let's go see Piranha 3D. So we did. And it was awesome. Yes. I loved it because that movie was like, listen, this is what this movie is.
Yeah.
Okay? We're gratuitous violence. Ridiculous, ridiculous gore, and boobs.
The dick belchinest piranha you ever did see.
And I loved it. I was so satisfied when that movie was over. I was like, that is exactly what I wanted to see. That it was great. It was one of my favorite movies of last year.
It really was.
It's a great movie. Do you feel like an asshole thinking it was gonna suck now?
Well, no, because I mean, if you just sort of like look on the face of it, like what the movie promises,
like the rad poster.
You have to excuse Jonah. He loves
this is my world. This is what I live with.
He loves piranha. He loves the fish piranha. So no,
I see.
Yeah, he's
I see.
A piranha.
Have you ever fucked a piranha out of the tank?
No. But my favorite scene in The Toy involves piranhas.
Of course it does. Yeah. How do you feel about the? Never mind. There's not piranha in that movie.
Which movie?
The one that I'm not going to say because it'll make me sound stupid.
Terms of Endearment?
No, there's no
piranha in that.
The piranha's in World According to Garp.
Ah, that scene. Because
there's also a dick throwing up scene in that movie that's great.
Oh, my God. There absolutely is.
Yeah. It's usually not what you're thinking about at that point in the movie.
No. But, yeah. But there is a dick throwing up scene in that movie.
It's implied.
Yeah, but you see that.
Come to the podcast. Here's talking about dick throwing up scenes. Bet you're glad you made the drive to Hollywood tonight, everybody.
This week on the week in dick puke scenes. two movies.
I give that scene 4 dick pukes.
Wait, is that a good thing?
On a scale of 5 dick pukes, this one gets a 4.
It's a reverse merit scale, so.
That one's kind of a dick verb. It didn't really get all the way into just on the back of my tongue. So it tasted bad.
I gotta tell you something. That dick puke scale is so Vader pussy. Do you want to? Is it all right if we just go for a few minutes longer, Matt? Okay. Cool. Because I thought it might be kind of cool to take a couple questions. If anyone has a couple questions for Will, we can We can take a couple audience questions before we wrap it up. Anyone?
It looks like no. I think we're done.
Anyone just bounding out of it? We've literally we've covered a lot of ground.
Yeah. We've made the audience want to leave.
Do you feel like when you were back for Star Trek Nemesis and they made you a lieutenant junior grade, they were like, fuck you.
I asked John Logan, who wrote the script. It's like, you know, people are going to ask me, like, why is Wesley in a Star Trek uniform? Because, like, I thought that he was, you know, riding around, you know, getting intergalactic van candy with the Traveler. Like, I'm confused by that, you know? Mom, listen, I know this is weird and all, but I'm quitting Starfleet so that I can go travel through space and time with the weird kind of pedo bear bald guy. Are you okay with that? Yes, Wesley, just leave. I don't care what you do. Just leave. Anything is better than what you're doing now. And then
Deanna Troi's like, listen to her. She knows what she's talking about.
I can't. I'm so tired of you walking by me and hitting me with your mind boners.
Oh, yeah.
So I asked him that, and he said, well, maybe he put on the uniform to be like, you know, to be like respectful of being there, or like maybe the Traveler thing never happened. And I was like, really? It was a dream? Like is that what you're telling me? He's gonna be in the sonic shower with Patrick Duffy. Like that's how that went down. Whatever, dude.
Could have been like when you were doing that experiment in engineering with the warp bubble, and then your mom was like, where is
everybody?
And
she was stuck on the inside, and she was like, yeah, that's where it was all happened. It was alternate universe stream, guys. Like, you've never heard of that?
Rebooted Star Trek?
Yeah. We went to the rebooted Star Trek premiere together.
We had
together,
so much fun. And we went to the Watchmen together, and we went to rebooted Star Trek together.
And we did that inside of like 3 weeks.
Yeah, it was a fun couple of weeks.
We leveled up when we did that.
We absolutely did.
That was great. I mean, took those guys down.
What you guys have to understand is that, of course, to the person who is not on Star Trek, it seems like, why wouldn't you want to be on Star Trek all the time? But I know it was difficult when you were doing it, like we said earlier, but also... You guys, you know how nerds can be. Nerds can be very arrogant and entitled, and they like what they like.
That's crazy talk.
You're doing it now.
Here's what I imagine. I imagine now you're the chief engineer on the Titan with Riker. I need to imagine these things.
Okay.
To keep that timeline of Star Trek going in my head.
Good.
Oh, good.
But
you sit on the other side of Jonah?
Everyone back out of the theater slowly. But I experience firsthand people coming up to you and being like, I fucking hate your character. I wish you would die. Like literally in your face. Yeah. Like you're not a human being.
Yeah.
Telling you that they hate you.
The reverse side of that has really started to come out. Maybe I guess probably over the last 5 years, I've been meeting people who are our age, mm-hmm. and they grew up watching Star Trek, and I meet people who are engineers and scientists because they thought Wesley was awesome,
mm-hmm.
and they wanted to do that. A friend of mine was recently in Antarctica driving robots around the Arctic tundra observing seals. And living
Heidi Klum's wife, husband. Heidi Klum's wife. Seals
well,
a lady.
You know, actually, I have some fan fiction where he is Heidi Klum's wife.
He would be so spotted in the snow. It would be like Seal. That's obviously Seal. That's not.
No, he'd be swimming in a whirlpool.
But he said, I never said this to you because we're friends and it would be weird, but I am going to Antarctica because I thought Wesley and Geordi were so cool that I wanted to be an engineer, and I made the choice when I was like 8. And I'm going to, he's like, I'm leaving for Antarctica in 2 days because of that. And I meet people who tell me that the only way they could have a relationship with their parents was through Star Trek. That was a thing that they did together. My son and I really wanted to like Dollhouse. And we stayed with it all the way to the end, so we should get a badge for that. And
it's made of shit.
And at the end of the season, Nolan turns to me and he says, "I can't watch this anymore. The only reason I watch this is because we watch it together." And I said, "Well, that's the only reason I'm watching it. Like, we should watch something that we both like. But the flip side of that, and, you know, like...
Just out there, just so you know, now Joss Whedon's never going to try to get into another Wootstock.
I don't think it's Joss's fault. That I think that they hired him to do something and then they wouldn't let him do it.
Yeah.
I really think that's what happened. I have met people who have... If I could build the time machine, I would go back to angry young me and I'd be like, dude, okay, first of all, don't be so angry. Your life is amazing. And you just don't realize it because you have no fucking perspective because you are a child. Mm-hmm. So that's number one. And number two, all these people who hate you right now, you're going to meet like by a factor of 10,000 people who think who what you're doing matters. You know, it inspires them. It matters to them. And I'd be like, fuck you, dude. Get out of my... I don't know. I'm playing Game Boy.
Are you sure you wouldn't be like, hey, creepy older guy with a beard, get out of my room. Furthermore, how did you get in here?
Nah, that stuff happens so often that I'd just be like,
look,
again?
You might as well just let me see your wiener. We have the same wiener.
If I blow you, it's not gay.
Look, it's... Listen, it's temporal masturbation is technically
okay.
What it is.
Come on. There's going to be a movie called Human Centipede.
Don't you want to be ahead of the curve? Don't you want to be
just ahead?
Yeah, going back and blowing yourself in time.
That right now there's a 15-year-old boy who's like, I'd do that.
But I just, I guess in closing, it is really great that you're everything's going so well now. What else are you working on?
I'm about to go back to Vancouver to start up Eureka again.
Great.
I'm really excited about that. I'm super bummed that that they're holding it. They're like, what we have heard unofficially is that they're not even going to air the second half of season four until June.
Yeah.
Which is such a bummer.
Well, they have like, so many ghosts to hunt on that network.
I know. Listen, I get it. I understand.
So many haunted places.
There are only...
International!
Then there's only so many hours in the day that, you know, and there's a lot of wrestling that goes on that is science fiction related.
As long as they
important.
Can make another Sharktopus, I am fine with it.
Okay, so the very first Blu-ray... I bought was Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus.
Fuck, such a great movie.
And I loved it. And Ann and I were so excited for Mega... What was it?
Mega Python versus Gatoroid?
Versus Gatoroid. Because they filmed it at the Arboretum in Arcadia. And we used to go there all the time. So we could like pick out like where things were. And we were like, it was like, oh, we had a picnic underneath that palm tree once. There were no giant alligators in there then. But guys.
They really let that place go to shit.
Okay, so Debbie Gibson is amazing. I love her. My wife knows this. Anne is my Debbie Gibson. I am her Rick Springfield. We're okay with it.
Okay.
Tiffany was terrific. The VFX were really bad. I mean, even by mega standards, they're really bad.
You saw the Gatoroid movie?
I did, yeah. We were excited. We DVR'd it. We were like, yeah, we're going to watch this fucking thing. Oh, we're going to watch the fucking hell out of this thing. We're going to watch this thing right out of the terrarium.
Well,
and then I was so bummed, and then I was so bummed. I was so sad. I was like, it's not as good as the other one.
But
what has
one,
happened to my life? Where I'm like, this isn't as good as the previous Mega Python movie that I saw.
But,
I've really been let
down.
Yeah,
but in the first one, they just basically splurged for like one shark shot, and then just showed it over and over again.
I know, it was perfect. It was a perfect movie. And in the second one, you know, Debbie Gibson sang on the soundtrack, which I thought was also nice.
Oh, she did?
Yeah. I knew her when I was really young, when I was like 14. I had, imagine the biggest crush you could have on a person, and that's the crush I had on her. Yeah. It was a big, 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 big crush. And she let me hang out with her and never let on that she knew that I was like, I'll do anything for you. I'd like to get lost in your eyes and other song titles you've written.
Only in my dreams.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a lot of things happened in my dreams.
So,
a lot of innocent things. We held hands and went to the mall. And then when we went to the mall, we were like, come on, let's go take out Tiffany. Because back then they were like enemies. That was how,
where is
how
she?
It worked.
I think she's performing in front of Merry-Go-Round.
Yeah. Let's go. Are we ready? Oh, what could have been?
She really makes your dick throw up.
Flowers, huh? You give me.
So that's, I think that's, we're kind of at the end of the podcast.
Yeah, we're all done.
Because I don't, you know, we there's another podcast after this, and you know we did an hour and 40 minutes, which is
you better split this over two episodes, or people are gonna get mad.
No, I'll just put it all as Mega Will versus Giant Christopus.
Dude, it's gonna be like living on Veteran all over again.
All over again. So
I'm really proud of you. By the way,
get out of come on. WTF.
Because I'm on your podcast and there's an audience full of people here who love you. I'm super proud of you. I knew when we lived on Strathmore that you were gonna do super awesome art things. I remember sitting down and just making you draw Ren and Stimpy stuff over and over and over again.
Yeah,
and
I wanted to be a cartoonist for the longest time.
And we went to all those Spike and Mike festivals of animation.
Yeah, we watched Frog Baseball together. Yeah, and
I still don't understand what was going on with Dead Z.
Dead Z was so weird. Was awful. And
but I'm really proud of you. It is awesome that you have carved out a niche for yourself. And are, for reals, and I've told you this before, and I'll put it on the podcast now, there are very few podcasts that I just never miss. And yours is one of them, and I love it. And I love the people that you have on it, and you guys are awesome.
Thank you, Will.
Thank you.
And it's really great to finally get to be part of this.
Oh, I forgot Matt and Jonah were here tonight. I'm so sorry.
Hey.
We were talking about stories about when we hang out.
You probably missed that.
I think someone turned off our microphones, but it was really funny.
I didn't mean to...
It's really funny.
I didn't mean to stomp on your compliment. I just got all flustered and embarrassed because I appreciate it. We could sit here and slobber on. When I think back of all the things that we did together and all the experiences we had, when you were saying that, I had the thought, I think Will and I kind of dated.
Yeah, I guess we kind of did.
Yeah, without the fucky parts.
That's all right. A lot of my dating was like that.
All right. Nerds. Anyway, thank you so much, Will Wheaton, for being here. Thank you guys for coming out. Thank you to Smodcastle for letting us do another live podcast here. We'll see you again very soon. Ladies and gentlemen, enjoy your burrito.
When the night has come and the land is dark and the moon is the only light we'll see, no, I won't be afraid. Oh, I won't be afraid, just as long as you stand by me. So darling, darling, stand by me. Oh, stand by me. Oh, stand. Stand by me. Stand by me. If the sky
could have been so beautiful, could have been so bright, you can.
This episode of the Nerdist Podcast was generously brought to you by Falcon Northwest Computer Systems. Custom build the PC, laptop, or desktop computer for you, complete with your awesome company logo. Visit falcon-nw.com. Goodbye, my children.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.